And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, your Capitol Watch All-Stars from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, President and CEO Rebecca Euler. Rebecca, thanks for being here.
Great to be here again, David.
And my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure to be here, David.
So, you know, one of the themes that we bring to the listeners on a regular basis is the issue of competitiveness, that we need Pennsylvania to be able to compete well with the other states in the union, with countries around the world, because in a free country with a free economy, investment decisions are voluntary. Like, Harrisburg can't pass a bill compelling people to, you know, locate and invest and hire and expand and operate here in the Commonwealth, right? We've got to set the conditions to get people to choose. And, you know, it's a hard-won thing, you know, to win a private sector investment for people to choose to plunk down a significant amount of operational capital to build something, whether it's a factory or you know, some other kind of facility, a power plant. But this is what we need to keep our economy going. So this is why, you know, I know you guys think that too, why we need leaders who understand, appreciate, and actually work towards improved competitiveness.
And no state and no national government exists apart from the competitive arena with all the other states and national governments and those citizens who choose to affiliate there. So you're looking at, in terms of worldwide competition, we're always in worldwide competition. We don't have a choice.
Right.
It doesn't matter what policies we enact. We can't pretend that's not there. It will impact us. It will determine who invests their capital in Pennsylvania or the United States, and then in, specifically mm-hmm. in our case, Pennsylvania, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. is our the premise of what we concern ourselves here at Capitol Watch with. So the question is, are the decisions that we're making in Pennsylvania, are they helping Pennsylvania to be able to compete on the international scale, which is what they have to do to survive? Mm-hmm. Can we compete? Are we helping ourselves? Are the leaders in our state helping us to be more competitive? Are the laws we're enacting helping us to be more competitive? Are we saddling ourselves with unnecessary regulation and difficulty when we don't need to be and making us less competitive?
Right, exactly. Overspending, locking in place, you know, taxes that are too high, so on and so forth on down the line. But it's, and I know that we've all had our experiences, but I mean, in general, there are good people in the process, but I would say overall that there really is a lack of vision and has been for some time.
Yeah, I think you have to make an investment in a business in a state like Pennsylvania. You not only have to agree that the environment, like Steve mentioned, the taxes, the regulatory environment, the workforce is available in the here and now. You also have to have faith that it's going to be there in the future, mm-hmm. which is also important if you're going to make a sizable investment in the Commonwealth. And the other thing I wanted to mention, as you were talking, I was thinking that the more we can attract jobs and investment into any state, the more they sort of perpetuate more investment
right.
and more jobs.
Right.
And it's a sort of never-ending process after that. So once you get that momentum going, then you generate the opportunity that continues that investment
yeah.
and businesses continue to flourish.
Exactly.
So that's what we really need and want.
Exactly. I mean, and Rebecca, what you're describing is a virtuous cycle.
Yes.
And
yes.
that's what we should want. That's what we should aspire to.
So everyone benefits from that. Yeah.
And if you look around the world stage and look for perhaps over the last 75 years or so of human history, people are much better off today all around the world, in every country practically, than they were in the past, whether it's 50 years ago, 75 years ago, whatever starting point you want to look at. People are more prosperous. They have a better lifestyle now because of economic advantages that the previous generations didn't have. That didn't happen by accident.
Correct.
It happened because the forces of free market economics were unleashed around the world. Even countries like China,
mm-hmm.
which at one time fully embraced a market top-down government-controlled economy
mm-hmm.
under essentially a dictatorship,
mm-hmm.
adopted the principles of free market competition and became much wealthier. And its citizens are much wealthier now, but so are ours. We've all won in that game, and that game centers around the opportunity for each nation to produce things that give it comparative advantage over others, produce efficiently as they possibly can, which the free market economic competition allows to happen, and it actually makes everybody better off.
Yeah. And Steve, what you described there as being a free market, a competitive market, really is just an expression of human energy, human innovation, human achievement. Like, this is how our talents and our drive are expressed in the real world by applying those talents, by innovating, that creative spirit, that competitive spirit. And so, you know, there was a time when at the turning of the previous century, from the 19th to the 20th, Pennsylvania was the third largest economy on earth. That it would have been the British Empire, the rest of the U.S., and then Pennsylvania.
Can you imagine that?
Stunning. It really is astonishing to think about. So we have this incredible, you know, legacy of industrial success, but it's something that has been taken for granted, I would say, and that over time that there's been this, you know, this sort of shrinking, sort of fading away, and you know, the challenge that we're faced with at this moment, which I really thought I would never live to see, but you know, we're talking now about Pennsylvania's probably its most famous corporate citizen, United States Steel, and that U.S. Steel is you know, that their competitive position has eroded, and that the decision has been made to seek a buyer for the company. And the deal that's on offer is actually an intriguing one. Do we wish that U.S. Steel could still stand on its own? Well, sure. But recognizing that's not the case, and that there's no way to wish that back into existence, the offer has come from the giant Japanese steelmaker Nippon Steel to merge with U.S. Steel, and that here are the terms of the deal: that U.S. Steel would remain headquartered in Pittsburgh, that U.S. Steel would continue to operate under its own historical brand name, and that no one would lose their jobs as a result of the transaction. And that Nippon Steel would honor all existing collective bargaining agreements. But as I say in the commercials, wait, there's more. that Nippon is a global leader in research and development, and that they have new technologies, new methods of production that are more efficient to make the blast furnaces work better, be more productive, but also to reduce emissions. So this is another sort of win-win type scenario, and that because Nippon Steel is in a strong financial position, that they would be able to reinforce U.S. Steel's pension and benefit obligations, while also providing billions of dollars for modernization, upgrade, and expansion of existing U.S. Steel operations. It's a rescue plan.
It's a massive infusion of capital into our state, into Pennsylvania.
Yes.
To put that entity, U.S. Steel, back on a worldwide competitive position to be able to win that overall battle for market dominance.
Yes. Yes.
Pennsylvania.
And this is a time when, obviously, you look at what China is doing with their provocations in the South China Sea, their threat against Taiwan. That this is the hour when America is going to need to draw close with those allies in the Pacific.
And Japan, where Nippon Steel is now based,
yes,
has been a staunch ally of ours since the end of World War II.
Correct.
We helped rebuild their steel industry after the war.
Yes.
Now they're in a position to help us rebuild our steel industry.
Exactly. And so this is the time when it's like this is something that not only would it be a good thing, beyond that, it's actually a necessary thing, and it's a little scary to think about what might happen if the deal does not go through. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me, Rebecca Euler from Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation. So if if the deal doesn't go through, and there's all kinds of posturing, and I'm sad to say that not only have President Biden and Vice President Harris come out against this, Senator Casey, Senator Fetterman, Governor Shapiro, and former President Trump have all said that they are against this deal, that, you know, U.S. Steel must be, you know, only directly American owned. And I just, it's terribly short-sighted. It's terribly short-sighted. I mean, the what Nippon is offering the shareholders, it's like $15 billion for the company, and that nobody else came close with that, the value offer. But again, just as I was saying, like, if U.S. Steel misses out on this deal to be able to gain strength from what Nippon would bring, the capital, the technology, all that stuff, I mean, U.S. Steel, the CEO, said that they're going to leave Pittsburgh. I mean, can you imagine what a hole, what a gaping wound in Western Pennsylvania to lose U.S. Steel, headquarters goes away. You know, the U.S. Steel would co-locate their headquarters somewhere, probably down in the American South, to be nearer to the operations that they have there, and that we would then look at, you know, steam. I mean, the assets that exist would continue to run for so long as they're profitable. But if they don't get the modernization dollars for upgrading, they're just going to age in place. And ultimately, you know, what happens in a business that when it comes time for cuts, the oldest and most outmoded facility is the one that gets shut down. And again, all of this is easily foreseeable. I mean, I don't claim to be some sort of like super genius with psychic powers. Like, this is what's pretty clearly gonna happen. And yet you've got all these leaders asleep at the switch. And I would say in particular that Governor Shapiro is the one who should be concerned about this. But at this hour, I haven't seen anything from him or the governor's office to try to help, you know, bring the deal to a conclusion.
Almost as if the powers that be are responding not with a sense of urgency, but rather a sense as if they don't care what the outcome is, that they're going to allow for this thing to fail as if there's some other alternative way it can succeed.
Right. Scorched earth.
It's they're missing the whole point for some reason.
And it's, I mean, I one would expect in this, you know, hot political season that the political influence of the United Steelworkers Union is part of that, because USW has said that they're against it, but they haven't made any kind of statement as to what a description of what would prove to be acceptable to them. So there's no sort of alternative vision. There's no counteroffer. It's just their answer is no.
Now, you said that Nippon is promising to honor all the union contracts.
Correct.
So that's not an issue.
And shouldn't be.
I think I read too that they also promised to keep the company's board and management majority American owned as well.
Yes.
So that, I know that was a concern as well. So,
yeah. And Rebecca, one of the things that folks need to understand is essentially Nippon is trying to become an American company.
Mm-hmm.
That by merging with U.S. Steel and by committing all of these Nippon resources to upgrades and modernization at U.S. Steel, that Nippon will be able to participate in domestic infrastructure projects in the U.S. that have Made in America steel requirements.
And we direly need those domestic steel products for our infrastructure.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And kind of much as we've seen with over the past decades with Japanese automobile manufacturing companies, they also came to the United States and made proposals and invested large amounts of capital, built plants that are producing cars that American citizens appreciate and pay for.
Right.
And it's become normal. It's become part of the normal landscape that, yes, we still have Ford and General Motors and so forth, but we also have the Japanese companies, and they're producing with American workers.
Yes.
Using American technology. They're having the benefits on their communities. They're paying the taxes, the assessments, all those things that make the community more prosperous and the country more prosperous. we're not in a world where we don't want the Japanese to come and manufacture things here. We want to attract all legitimate manufacturers here to the United States,
right,
and to Pennsylvania.
Right. And again, this is I would think that this would be a sign of U.S. strength that investors from other parts of the world,
exactly,
would want to come here and make these kinds of bets on success.
Well, Pennsylvania strength.
And Pennsylvania strength.
Yeah.
Amen to that. One of the things that it sort of tugs at my heartstrings a little bit. It's not a direct issue, but I can't help feeling strongly about it. The gentleman from Nippon Steel who is overseeing the merger, Mr. Mori, M-O-R-I, Mori-san, and he is a very distinguished gentleman. He's the number three officer at Nippon Steel, one of the largest corporations on earth. So he's an exceptionally successful, prominent businessman. He earned his master's in business administration from the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. That Mori-san he's American educated. He's obviously very much accustomed to and comfortable with working with Americans, working in the U.S. His English is excellent. And so I just to feel the heat of this American jingoism and nativism that we don't want these these terrible foreigners. It's like, no, this great gentleman is obviously a friend to our country.
Let us give you money.
Yes, and he's trying to help us. Like, how hard should it be to allow our friends to help us? And so I shudder to think what his private thoughts must be about the political experience that he's having here in Pennsylvania. So, but it's, we may be in the late innings, but the game isn't over yet.
Well, coming back to what you said about the turn of the last century and how the Pennsylvania economy was third in the world, and to think about the large industries that were top of the Pennsylvania's economy at that time, we had a lot of great industry,
mm-hmm,
throughout our history as a Commonwealth. And obviously the steel industry was top,
yep,
one of the top ones. And to think about that history, and we at PMTA like to talk about how trucks,
mm-hmm,
delivered those products. And the steel industry in Pennsylvania built America around that period of time. And Pennsylvania trucks delivered that steel to,
yep,
the cities where the infrastructure and the buildings and everything were built with Pennsylvania steel. We're really proud of that. And I mentioned that because of the history of having steel production in Pennsylvania. Would love to keep that history and maintain that legacy, for one thing. But the second thing is the impact on all the other industries,
right,
and on the business community in the state and the jobs and just all of the impact on business and community in the state of Pennsylvania if we were able to keep those jobs.
Oh, amen to that. And understand that steelmaking is foundational to an industrial economy.
Yes.
That you have to have steel to build most of the things that then become used in further industrial activity. I remember at one point there was a skeptic who said about, why do we still need new steel? There's so much has been made. It's like, well, it's because a lot of the steel that has been made is still in use, like holding up buildings,
yes,
and bridges and stuff. So it's like, yeah, we're always going to need more and new steel, and yes, very much our preference would be to continue that great tradition here in Pennsylvania, adding value with, great, great jobs, great careers for our steel workers. So anyway, we'll have to leave it there for the moment. But again, as we always say to you listeners, remember, representative self-government is not a spectator sport. Please choose to be involved. And from what you've heard, if you think this sounds like a good deal, let your lawmakers know. So anyway, with that, we'll go around the horn here. Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and your group and the things that you're doing?
They can visit CommonwealthFoundation.org on the internet.
Okay. Thank you. And Rebecca, where can people find the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association?
They can find us at PMTA.org.
Outstanding. As always, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org. And from Steve and Rebecca and me, thanks very much to all of you for listening. We will catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.